Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington, in the middle of the Salish Sea and radiating from one of the centers of island cultural activity known formally as the Jean Bosch Voice of Vachon broadcast studio in the bustling and bodacious heart of a rapidly changing island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we the Briefly strive to keep Brian's bright flame alive. We also arrive it, but we've tried to keep it alive as well by bringing you weekly episodes of hopefully intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. So our Briefly panel includes our control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, treetop flyer, and that's a whole story in its own right, of course, yeah. And longest-serving Briefly Truman O'Brien.
Good morning. Good morning. Glad to see you all in the studio this morning.
Yeah, we got the whole crew here this morning.
The whole crew.
That should be good. Also, part-time politico, water transit miracle worker, full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer.
Hello, good morning.
Good to have you, Amy.
Thank you. Good to be back.
And mariner, backpacker, rocket scientist, and haven't flipped a quad yet. Now, that's an interesting, what kind of quad? Are we talking quad boats or quad cars?
I'd say just give me a little more time and who knows what might happen. But we're talking a rowing shell at this point.
A quad rowing shell. Yeah. This is our island rowing club member, Kevin Jones.
That's me.
It's good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
And a legal beagle, I'm not sure what that means.
You know, I don't know what the derivation of that is, actually. I was hoping that you knew the answer to that, Bruce. I'll have to figure that one out.
Yeah, maybe it's like you're like dogs. Oof. You just get hold of something and never let go, right?
Legal dachshund, is there alternatives? Do I have choices here?
I like legal dachshunds.
Mediator, Fulbright scholar, shoe salesman, Pinkerton guard, and former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, Craig Bellis.
Roof!
He's here. That's about all you'll get today, but that's good. And I am historian Bruce Hallman. Today is a Truman show, which means we do not have a small talk guest, but rather the Brieflys take time to discuss current island, regional, national, and international events. And actually, that's the way the Brown Briefly began, as just a conversation. Initially, a one-way conversation from Brian, right, Truman? Way back when. And it was all recorded in those days. Yeah, and then it gradually emerged and sort of developed and evolved into what we have today. But before we start unraveling recent events, are there any recent events that need to be unraveled?
Let's check. I don't know.
How many hours do we have?
You mean on island? Yes, right. Regionally? Yes.
What are the seven words that we can't use?
Exactly.
In the galaxy? Yeah.
Yes. Let's check in with Brieflys about their week. Amy, how are you doing?
I am trying to figure out still what feet my island are on right now. I had the incredible good fortune to travel to Hawaii, specifically Kauai, earlier this month, and just had, we again had a great time there, and it was lovely, and there were chickens everywhere, which is just, you know, right straight out of my dreams, the good ones, not the nightmares. And yeah, we had a fantastic time, and then took the red eye back, which of course is always good for a day or two of discombobulation. And then Sunday drove up to the San Juans they had their kind of ferry forum yesterday morning, their like economics ferry forum, where they specifically talked about the economic impacts of the ferries. And that was a 2-hour meeting, and I could probably talk for like 3 hours about the 2-hour meeting. But really good meeting, really good to connect with them up there. And then came back last night. So it was, I took the 3:45 from Friday Harbor and was able to get on the 7:30 boat to Vashon.
Wow.
But that's still a long trip.
That's a long trip.
So today my feet are right here on Vashon Island, where they will remain until we head to Olympia next week for Fix Our Ferries Lobby Week, regional Fix Our Ferries Lobby Week.
Which is the 4th through the 6th. Do I remember that right?
That is right.
Okay, there you go. Put it on your calendars.
So one quick question. What's the price of eggs on Kauai?
You know, it is not that much worse than it is here. And the gas is about the same price as it is on Vashon. I for sure noticed that. It's about like $5.30 a gallon on Kauai.
Plus, as you recall, if you've been to Kauai, I'm sure, Bruce, there's an extraordinary number of chickens and roosters on that island.
Yes. That's why I was asking about eggs, right?
Free-range scavenger.
That's right.
And not only that, but these days what I've noticed, because I haven't been to Kauai for quite a long time, but there was like a 3-year gap between visits, and their solar panel is the whole island. Like has like gone crazy with solar panels, because what they're doing is trying to basically get away from having to fuel their energy needs by burning diesel.
Yeah.
And it's what I saw was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Maybe it's even more phenomenal now.
Good idea for people who live on an island.
I think it's a good idea. Yeah, I personally invested in that.
Makes you want to go.
Yes. Craig, how are you doing?
Well, nothing so ambitious as what Amy, but she has youth on her side.
Yeah.
For now.
Well, you will always be younger than the rest of us.
Right. That too shall pass.
Right. That's right.
Aside from repainting our living room or working on that, and it says all cutting in. The whole thing is just cutting in, you know, tons of that. But went to the Robbie Burns supper on Saturday up at the North End Grange, you know, that Jennifer Potter has had a wonderful evening up there in a perfect setting. We had John Daly do the toast to the lassies, and then the reply by our own briefly Lynn Kerrigan, who does an absolutely amazing job of the toast to the laddies. The laddies don't get off quite unscathed, as you might imagine, during that toast. And then we had entertainment by all sorts of people, including Kat Eggleston, and John Burke did the parade and the ode to the haggis. And it was a good time was had by all that night.
Great. Kevin, how about you? How's your week been?
You know, it's been kind of a boating week a little bit. You know, you may notice, Bruce, I've been sort of AWOL from the docks, but I spent some time out there yesterday. Opus now has a brand new road, new chain, new line. Yeah,
nice.
So, you know, that's when you put the anchor out and you're looking at that line paying off and going, you know. How much is the wind going to come up tonight? So, we got that done. But also, speaking of keeping your boat afloat, Quartermaster Yacht Club Tech Talks are back.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not this Tuesday, but it's next Tuesday, first Tuesdays, at the Hut, Myers Hut, on the water at Quartermaster Yacht Club. So just north of the Burton Four-Way Stop, you get to the top of the hill, and on your right, you'll notice you know, a small building and a sign. So that's where it is. It's open to everybody. So if you want to join in, 7 o'clock, I believe. I'd have to double check. 6, maybe 7 o'clock. I'll have more data next time. But we're going to be talking next week, next Tuesday, about keeping your boat afloat and how the Vestas Wind grounded in presumably the middle of the ocean in around the world's sailing race. And so it is one of my favorite tech talks, and I'm sure the people who show up for that will be shocked and amazed at what they'll see. About navigation chart accuracy. So yeah,
that is some marketing, Kevin.
I went through this stuff last night, the visuals, the images, and it's like I love this tech talk. So yeah. If you're interested in how good your charts are, stop down.
So don't rely on them totally. Huh?
There's always
the margin for error, right?
Giving a hefty berth is sometimes wise.
Good deal. So Truman, how was your week?
Well, I have to start out by saying, as you guys know, Craig and I share an airplane, and I have to tell you, that darn thing is a truck. I mean, truly, it is a truck. Yesterday, I flew over to Spokane because a friend of mine was buying 2 wing jacks for a high-wing airplane. And what these things are, they're It was 5 feet 7 inches tall. No, five feet five inches tall, 38 inches across the base. And we loaded both of those things in that airplane and flew them back over here. It was, he kept saying, we're going to have to take them all apart to do it. We're just going to have to take them apart. And I said, no, we're not. They'll fit. And they did. And we trucked them right over. And it was a beautiful day for flying.
Oh, I can imagine.
There was not a ripple in the air.
Oh, really?
Not,
even no. Going over the mountains?
Smooth as silk, really? All the way there, all the way back. Oh, yeah. Wow. Much faster coming home than going. Yeah, right. We had a pretty good tailwind sure, coming back. But yeah, it was, anyway, so that was great fun. That was my week.
Oh, fantastic. My week's been pretty quiet, but I did have an interesting Saturday afternoon. Terry Donnelly has been doing photographs of the new exhibit, permanent exhibit at the museum, for the archives and for publicity and for, you know, reporting to the NEH. If we still have the NEH yeah. here in the future, we'll wait and see. But he needed some kids to get photographs of children, you know, sort of using the exhibits and the hands-on stuff and stuff like that. So we rounded up four of my grandkids here and a few of their friends. So, and we got to the museum and it was, there were already a couple families there. So there were probably 10, 12 kids running around the museum. And Terry emailed me this morning and he said, well, I've narrowed it down to 75 photographs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But it was a kick watching these kids, you know, just sort of walk through the museum, and there's lots of hands-on stuff for kids. And it was just a kick and to get it documented. So that was one of the highlights of my week.
Nice. So,
yeah. So today is January 27th, which means it's the 27th day of 2025. And for those of you who are counting, it's only 632 days until the November 3rd, 2026 midterm elections.
Oh boy. Actually, so, the day is the 28th.
Oh,
it is the 28th.
It is the 28th.
That's true.
So oh, it's, my goodness. 631 days.
I was reading my chart.
But the good news is that midterm election is one day closer.
That's right.
We've all done that, I think, when we're putting together the information.
Okay. So on the 28th day here, Truman has discovered some very special things about January 27th.
Well, 28th, actually, the 28th.
Oh, is it the 28th?
The 28th, yes. Yeah. The 27th, actually, was the Mozart's birthday, by the way, 269 years ago today.
That's right.
I mean, yesterday. Right. Yeah.
I remember it well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wolfgang,
yes. So, I got a couple of things. Actually, a bunch of things. But 1754, British writer Horace Walpole, in a letter to Horace Mann, coins the first use of serendipity. I thought that was kind of interesting. And where it comes from is he mentioned about all of these changes, and he said, from the Princess of Serendip. And the Princess of Serendip is the old Persian name for Sri Lanka, which I thought was kind of interesting. Now this is one I really like. 1887. In a snowstorm at Fort Keogh, Montana, the world's largest snowflakes are reported, 15 inches wide by 8 inches deep. Can you imagine that?
No, I can't.
15 by 8. That is a huge snowflake. I don't know.
Boy, it's a wouldn't snow take... bomb. Bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
Snowball. It's flying snowballs.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Float gently to Earth, right?
But yeah. Well, I can imagine it wouldn't take too many of them to get you, you know, 10 feet of snow. But here's what's interesting about Fort Keogh. Fort Keogh is actually just west of my hometown of Miles City, Montana. It's at the confluence of the Yellowstone and Tongue Rivers. And it's the last camp that Custer and his men stayed at before they went to the Little Bighorn. And actually, Fort Keogh was formed, the battle was in June, and Fort Keogh was actually formed in August of that year by General Nelson A. Miles, from which Miles City is named. And it was used, they built it there to stop the patrols preventing the Cheyenne and Sioux, who were involved in that, from escaping to Canada. But my question for you, Bruce, the Yellowstone River is huge right there. Mm-hmm. How would those tribes get across that river? Makes you want to wonder, doesn't it?
It's the third one this show.
I know. I found that interesting that they would have to put up a fort to keep them from fording the river.
Ancient aliens.
I think so. I've been across the Tongue River. I've ridden a horse across the Tongue River, by the way. Mm. Yeah. Okay, so 1915, Woodrow Wilson refuses to prohibit the immigration of illiterates, which I thought was interesting. Yes. They were going to, anybody who's illiterate gets, well, I mean, who were immigrants, gets sent back. Mm-hmm. But it was eventually overwritten by Congress. 1915, the Coast Guard was created out of the merger of the life-serving service and the U.S. Cutter Service. Captain Joe will tell you all about that. So it's the Coast Guard birthday. 1948, a plane crash in the Diablo Mountains killed 28 Barceros, farm workers, from being sent back to Mexico. I thought this was appropriate. And it's the inspiration for Woody Guthrie's song, Deportee. And we actually played it this morning. Mm. It was a DC-3. And what's interesting about it is that in the newspapers, they listed the three crew members by name, and then they just said all the other 28 were deportees. Mm. And I thought that was interesting. And Woody Guthrie obviously found it interesting. The charity single in 1985, which we just heard as we came on the air, Where All the World, was recorded. 1986, Space Shuttle Challenger exploded 73 wow. seconds after liftoff in Cape Canaveral, killing the seven crew members, which included Krista McAuliffe, who was the first teacher in space, and Dick Scobie was the commander. And Dick Scobie, by the way, is the name of the airport now in Auburn. Hmm. So it was named after him because he was from Auburn. Dick Scobie was. So that's one of those events like the JFK assassination that wouldn't affect you, Amy. But
No. I remember I was in Burton Elementary in the library. We were watching the TV.
Oh, you saw it actually happen?
That's right, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. How about you, Bruce? Where were you?
Ooh.
Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Strike you? Yeah. Hmm. Anybody else remember where they were?
Yeah, I was living in my brother's back house in the Oakland Hills and going to school at Berkeley at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So, studying.
I had just landed at SeaTac and was getting off the airplane. I mean, I was the captain. Mm-hmm. I was getting off the airplane, and one of the rampers came running up and said, "The shuttle just blew up." And I came into operations, and we were all gathered around the TV and watched the aftermath of all of that. But it's one of those things that's burnt very, very strongly in my memory. Okay, the last one. I like this one. In 2021, do you remember the Bernie Sanders, the photograph of him with these mittens all bundled up? And he was mm-hmm. everywhere.
Yes.
You know. Well, they auctioned off his glove or his mittens that he wore for $1.8 million for Vermont charities. Isn't that fantastic. Great?
That makes more sense than the price I paid for the banana that was taped to the wall. Right.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, I thought that was kind of fun. So that's my history for the day.
So, you know, one thing about that history that caught my attention, the banning the immigrants who are illiterates.
Yeah.
It turns out that this year in the Washington State legislature, there's a bill, not along that lines exactly, but saying that those who apply for a job that does not require you to be a driver is not required to have a driver's license to submit an application for the job.
Ooh.
Apparently, I did not know this. There are basically places where in your job application, you are required, apparently, to submit an application for a job to submit your driver's license.
Sure.
And apparently, some people feel that's inappropriate if driving is not a job requirement. So perhaps we'll open a few more doors. So I thought that was intriguing.
That would not apply to Metro drivers, of course.
No.
Yes, exactly.
That is really interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, well, I've heard people claim that along the lines of illiteracy that, you know, people in this country should have to speak English in order to get a job. And I sort of thought, well, if the job requirement demands it, maybe that makes sense. But otherwise,
Yeah, there's no those
maybe a great explanation for why my 17-year-old grandson does not have a job, because he does not have a driver's license. Yet and has no interest in getting one, which is very, very interesting to me, because when I was that age, we couldn't wait to get our driver's license.
Generational issue.
Yeah, it is. It's a. But I know a number of kids kids, well, young adults at this point, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, no interest in getting driver's license. And it's just sort of like, wow, what a cultural change.
Well, you know, it really, I think it has to do with where you live as well. For example, when I was at the University of Montana, we had one of my classmates there was from Chicago. Mm-hmm. He did not have a driver's license, right. But he had a pilot's license.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
He didn't have any interest in driving. But he certainly wanted to fly.
The only time I've been to New York City was to visit my sister, and she was able to arrange a loan of a car. So mm-hmm. I flew into the airport. She came pick me up in the car. And, you know, as soon as we had the car and we wanted to go somewhere, it's now what do we do with this thing?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
No parking.
So this week on the Briefly, we've had a spirited email discussion about what we should talk about today. There are quite a few topics sort of swirling around. And the sort of discussion was, should we focus on all the horrible things that have been spewing out of the Oval Office, implementing the provisions of the 2025 plan and creating despair and fear for many? Or should we focus on an antidote to despair, the action solutions we can take to counter that despair? The consensus was that we should each take some time and talk about how we individually, and then we as Americans and Vashon community members, are responding to this question. Should we despair and focus on the craziness of the past week, or should we respond with actions, and what actions? So let's take some time and just sort of work around the group. I'm assuming this will be a free-flowing discussion. And let's start with Amy.
Oh, yeah. I think, like many of us, this is something I've been thinking about since 2016, right? Like, since the first time around when we did this. And this very much feels like in some ways, it helps to let something gel in your mind. You know, I was always better, unfortunately, in school, I was always better at the math that we had learned last month, right? It took me about a month for it to sink in, right? It has kind of finally sunk in. And of course, it's, you know, it's back at the top of the list. And I was sort of really interested to see all of, everything that was sent around, the different perspectives from different constituencies around, you know, let's go at it this way or let's go at it that way. And I think, this is sort of there will be no definitive conversation, right? It will be iterative and responsive and proactive and all those things. But the more I think about it, of course, there's a lot of prescriptions going around, right? A lot of prescriptive stuff. And the more I look at all of the different, you know, do this, do that, here's how you can do this or do that, the more I think how important it is not to be tribal about it, but to internalize different things based on who you are. Right. Because there is no one panacea. You know, some things I read and I connect with, and some things I read and I think, well, you know, that works if you are of a certain privileged status, or that works if you're of a certain group that is being targeted. Right. Like, different kind of advice, you know, as I read it and see it works for different folks. And, the one thing that felt consistent for me was keep your head up. You know, keep your head on a swivel, keep engaged with whatever it is that you engage with, right? I think my prescription or hope is that, you know, we don't bite with mainstream media on the shock and awe, as we've talked about, right? We know that he is just going to continue to do this, right? That is part of the strategy. Is to just continue to throw punches, you know, I don't know what analogy you want to use, right? The shotgun method, but he'll just continue to throw stuff out to overwhelm. And so, you know, keeping your head on a swivel, but also keeping your filter on. I've definitely already started to feel it's harder and harder for me to parse what's true and isn't true. Did he or did he not do this thing, right? And sort of that continual fact checking. And social media certainly isn't helpful with that. So to me, I've also reminded myself to be, very discretionary and fact check, right? And just continue to look at sources that I know are fact checked. Last week, for instance, there was a report on the Vashon social pages, you know, that ICE was on the island. And, you know, that the question there is, were they? Did that person post that for what reason, right? So here we are in this world of total overwhelm. And it's hard to be proscriptive, but I think just settling in with who you are and who you want to be in this, that's the other question I've asked myself. Who do I want to be? What role can I play? I can't play every role. We cannot single-handedly fight back against every single thing that's going on. And really, I think if you are someone who's already plugged in and active, and you've been active, you know, as I have for decades, how do you sort of parse that with this need to be even more and more active? You know, there's certainly fatigue that's going on. It's really interesting. I used to work for Donna Brazil. I was lucky enough to have a position with her for a while. And, I went in and I was sort of talking. I was in her office and talking to her about something. And, you know, ridiculously, because I think I was like late 20s or something. So I said all kind of ridiculous things to her, of course, because I'm in my late 20s. But I said something and, you know, she just kind of said, you know what? I've served America. I'm not doing that. You know, and sometimes I feel that, you know, sometimes I feel like, you know, I served America. I've been doing this work for 30 years now. I'm going to continue to do the work that I'm going to do. But, you know, again, it's that fatigue that we want to fight. So I think as with everyone else, my thoughts are all over the place and I look forward to the discussion.
Well, it's like you're not going to save the world anymore. You're just going to have to take care of yourself and what you can affect. That's what strikes me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and we are in the upper left-hand corner in many ways of the country. I mean, we're a long way from a lot of things, and it's difficult. And you can't fight every battle. You have to choose your battles, yeah. And it's an interesting sort of dilemma to be in because there's so many, it's sort of like World War II. There's not just one front.
Oh yeah.
And it's not two or three fronts. There's multiple fronts. And yeah. So how do you sort of deal with that? And maybe that's a question to throw to Kevin. I mean, you're fairly active politically and in resistance. So what are you doing?
So 2016 resonates with me as well. As a matter of fact, brought in a little icon from history where it reads, complaint without action is compliance. Mm-hmm. And it sort of tries to set a theme in my mind where it is important to acknowledge what's going on in the country. How we respond and react to that news, I think, is what makes the difference in my mind. And if we can accompany acknowledgement of the crazy things that are happening, and the destructive things that are happening, and the recognition that people will be harmed, you know, by what's happening. We need to, in my mind, couple that with what actions we can take. And I'd love to say that, you know, we are so influential that we're going to change the world. But we're not, you know, but we can influence those who do have authority, and how we do that, and how we do that in a way that's sustainable and impactful is the difficulty. That's the challenge, I guess. And we're going through that right now. But people are reacting and responding. And you see that in the news. A lot of people have been pushing back. And I think that deserves to be encouraged. I think we're going to see more of that. And we're going to see retaliation against the pushback, right? So that's the future that we're going to have for the next, presumably, 4 years. But we also see that there's a lot of groups who are organizing and arranging actions that people can take. Indivisible Vashon is one such group. That's the group that I'm really familiar with. For example, there's five groups or so in the state of Washington who are now reactivated. There's, I think, seven new groups that have come forward. People, you may not see it, you know, your neighbors may not be doing this work, but it is happening. And so there's larger opportunities for people to come together in community. The other thing is, in my view, we talked about privilege a little bit. And many of us, certainly those of us sitting here around this table, have at least a certain degree of privilege. And how do we recognize that strength and use that strength? So just here on Vashon, I've had the good opportunity through maybe 3 years of being part of the Equity Committee and some of the outreach, but being able to connect with folks who talk about the work they're doing. I just got a call this morning from a person who's associated with the Episcopal and Unitarian Church, saying, how can we work together on protecting parts of our community? So I'm very encouraged by that. You know, I'm discouraged by the fact that we have to be in this way of operating, but I'm encouraged because I think people will come forward and do what is needed. And it's a benefit to our own community here, right? I just think we together can get a lot of tremendous benefit morally, culturally, spiritually from joining together and across lines of difference, right? Because it's really, I think, important that we clarify what we value and work hard to preserve that. Okay. So the one thing that sort of motivates me, this acknowledge but action, a good friend of mine sent me an email some years ago in response to Heather Cox Richardson. And Bruce, you saw some of my frustration that with that. And Heather Cox Richardson is amazing. But Heather Cox Richardson does not always provide a prescription, right? And this email was, now what do we do about this, right? That's what that email was about. And I thought, well, yeah, it would be awesome, you know, if the message was accompanied by what we can do. Historians don't always feel chartered to do that, right? They're historians. Right. They're here to portray what happens. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, each one of those instances is some level of trauma, right, for the person reading this news. So I think it's important to recognize that anybody who has a powerful voice can share what's happening, but realize you may just be spreading trauma to people who then feel, you know, less powerful as a consequence. So I think our communications are important. The messaging that we send is important. And I think we have a real opportunity to message that, yes, we need to come together and find opportunities to do that and hopefully find good opportunities that will be impactful and influential.
So let me follow up with that just a quick second with the idea that, you know, we're dealing with both local sort of county, state, and national sort of fronts all at the same time.
And international.
Well, yeah, that's another ballgame, too.
That's a whole new ballgame,
you know,
yeah.
And how do you differentiate between, where do you put your energies, and how do you make that decision, or do you?
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Yeah, and that's a really good question. So, and I wish I were an expert on that, you know? But I can say that what conversations we've had over the course of the last 8 years in Indivisible Vashon is there's usually always a lane that's open, and making progress in any lane is making potential for progress in other lanes. In Washington State, that is really important right now. You know, we have one of the states in the union that basically did not move to the right. And actually, I read a piece that not too many states moved to the right. It's just that people on the left didn't show up. There's a really compelling analysis that I read just yesterday about how true that is. But one of the blueprints for blue states that comes from Indivisible National is let's show the rest of the country what life is like guided by progressive government. And in my mind, what that translates to is, what are the problems that people see in our lives, in our country, right, that really need to be addressed? And I'm not saying that progressive policies have been successful in addressing all of them. There are people still living on the streets, for example. But can progressive policies do a better job of providing livelihood, health care, and food security, and housing security, right? How do we do that and improve on that? Because the goal is to change the mind of a voter in Ohio, perhaps, right? So I think there's ways to do that. And we've talked about some strategies to be able to not only take those kinds of actions, but to be able to do so in a way that you break through all of the noise, you know, that you have to be able to get people's attention about what you're doing and what it is. So I could talk at length about that, and some of those ideas are just in the incubator right now. Mm-hmm. But find where you have influence, and we do. Mm-hmm. Find out how you can use that influence in a way that is going to be newsworthy and that's going to reach the people that you want to hear about it. Mm-hmm. The goal of changing their way of thinking about the governance that they prefer. I wish I could say that was going to be easy, but it is something that I'm very intrigued by finding a way to use, to move forward with.
Yeah, well, and the old adage, all politics is local. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's sort of like, hey, I mean, it's true on one level, on another level, you know, things beyond the local impinge on local politics, but mm-hmm. essentially, you know, well, you got to do it at home.
The local opinion. You know, right. It's what you're talking about,
yeah,
really. Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But in this model, there's another element, too, is that, you know, we know that Washington, California, Oregon, Nevada, maybe Arizona, are all have potential for being governed by progressives, if you will. Mm-hmm. But Oregon has a very close governor's race, very competitive governor's race in 2026. They also have a Democratic trifecta in their state right now, but it's vulnerable. So what we are doing with Indivisible Vashon is looking across the country about where these competitive races will be. For example, in Wisconsin in 2025, the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Okay, there's a 4-3 progressive right now in that Supreme Court. So why do we care in Washington about Wisconsin Supreme Court? Well, in 2026 in Wisconsin, they're going to have a very competitive governor, attorney general, and secretary of state race. All three of those seats are competitive. Their Supreme Court is going to help decide how they count the votes and who gets to vote. And those office holders are going to decide how they conduct their elections, et cetera. So and Wisconsin is not a lightweight in terms of the states, right? It's part of the blue wall in the Midwest. So that's the kind of things that we are looking at. Can I do an advertisement? On February 3rd, we're going to have a member meeting at the Land Trust. That's going to be Monday. Doors open at 6:30, starts at 7. You're going to hear from each one of our focus groups that we're going to go forward with, including Immigrant Refugee Rights Work Group, Building a Progressive Majority, Legislative Action, all of these things. If you're intrigued by these conversations, you can drop in and hear a little bit more about what we hope to accomplish and how people can get involved. And you can. And it's now. And it's in 2025. It's not 2 years from now.
Great. Greg, what's doing over there in your head?
I can hardly keep it all straight. I agree, of course, with my fellow Brieflies, what I've heard so far. I was for many years very Pollyannish. I'm not calling any of you Pollyannish, but I was very Pollyannish.
But we may be.
I was very optimistic. I had great faith in our government institutions. I knew that if we could live with Nixon for as many years as we did and survive, we could probably do it with Trump. I've turned into Chicken Little. Kevin and I, for the most part, had a discussion on email before today's show, and I said my thoughts were you have to let people know what's going on before you can address what you can do about it. Or what, you know, what remedies you might have. It's kind of a chicken and the egg problem. You've probably heard quotes. There's numerous quotes like this, but I just ran across this one this morning. It's hard to find the balance between educating yourself on current events and not making yourself so indescribably sad that you can't properly function. Because we're being fed this news and these actions like from the head of a fire hose. The Trump administration is flooding our minds and the media with events. As many of you may know, just yesterday, this executive directive for government agencies to cut off funding, discretionary funding to individuals, to nonprofits, to organizations around the United States, was initially looked at, you know, just sort of as a kind of a second thought in some of the press, and then it just started to balloon here in the last 12 hours as to how wild that could be, what an effect, not to mention the illegality of it, because the legislature, the Article 1 portion of our Constitution, 1, gives that power to the legislature, not to the executive. And the executive seems to be arrogating that to themselves. They're supposed to give 30 days notice before they, so that the legislature can respond. But that was skipped. And that's a big deal because nobody got any notice of it. It just happened. And it's supposed to go into effect here in just a couple hours. There was a news conference this morning. The first big news conference by the woman who is the new new secretary, she's asked that question after Breitbart and the other people that they let back into the room got through their questions, but she was asked that question by an NBC reporter, and she goes, well, it's all spelled out. This is what the mandate we have is, and this is the way we're going to look at this in order to figure out where the waste is. And the thought was, well, why couldn't you do it according to the book? Well, no answer really. But that's just one example that just occurred in the last few hours. You know, not to mention the whole immigration thing birthright citizenship and all these other deals. But as a former constitutional law professor and as a lawyer, these things are changing the nature of our democracy. And I understand it when I hear my friends say, I never watch the news, it's just too depressing. Or I never watch the news because it's just the same old thing with government. You know, they'll work it through. And I want people, I ask people to just consider the fact that maybe it's not the same old thing. It may be over the edge in terms of the legality and the constitutionality and our form of democracy in the United States. This is the old thing about it's a great government. Now let's hope you can figure out how to keep it. Yeah. Great form of government. And this is, you know, again, people may accuse me, oh, come on, you know, they're both the same. Both parties are the same. They're both exactly, you know, they're both criminals, and that's just the way it's always been. Well, yeah, there has been a lot of criminals. There's been a lot of lawlessness over the history of the United States. But we have to remain vigilant. I understand if for your own sanity, you cannot deal with this all the time. I understand that totally. Because it just is overwhelming. And as Amy pointed out, so much of it may not be exactly true or wholly true, be it from either side. So you've got to engage in some critical thinking. You've got to verify what are the facts. But at the same time, just because we live up here in the north, west corner of the United States does not mean that we on this privileged, gated community that we live in are not going to be affected by the things that are being done here in the last week. Just the mere fact that ICE has been on this island before, and ICE will be on this island again here sometime. They're in Chicago, and they're going to Baltimore and whatnot, San Francisco and probably Oakland and L.A. Just imagine that you're 5 or 6-year-old kid is in school. You're white, blue-eyed, American, third, fourth generation American child, citizen is there. And guys come in with guns and flak jackets and whatnot in order to search the school to see who is and who isn't, an immigrant because you've got brown skin.
And to take away their friends.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So my point is I think we do have to remain vigilant. Learn as much as you can without destroying your psyche. You know, recognize that there are things, as Kevin says, that you can do. My own particular favorite is the Trump administration seems to be affected by public opinion still. I mean, he's taken the basic negotiating principle of let's push it as far over the edge as possible and then compromise. Mm-hmm. So he gets somewhere mm-hmm. on the issue. And the issues that he's addressing are issues that we all share to a large degree, many of them. It's just the way it's being done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ACLU's one of my favorite ways of addressing this, the state attorneys general that brought these lawsuits on the birthright immigration issue, the birthright citizenship issue. There are other ways, Indivisible Vashon at a more local level. There are ways to do this and to write to your congresswoman or man. They may share the same positions we have. But they can now walk into a meeting and say, I've got these many letters from people or emails that support this position. This isn't just me talking. This is a lot of people. So there are ways to address it.
So Truman, what's your response?
Well, I mean, I'm going to pick up on everything everyone else has said because it's kind of where I was at to start with. And that is, as you all know, of course, I have many, many friends who are very conservative and have very different opinions. And then there's the other group that says, oh, I'm just fed up. I'm going to, as you've said, I'm going to quit watching the news. And I love Amy's comment of living in a world of overwhelm. I've got to keep that written somewhere. That I think that's wonderful. So I think the trick is, and what my issue is that we have to pay attention, as you've all said, what's happening. And my thought and my problem is, how do I talk to these, my friends, who are so far the other direction and say, look, here's what's happening and this is how that relates. I mean, how can I do that so that it has some impact? And a word that that you use, Kevin, being impactful. What things can I say to them that will have an effect? And I'm thinking, gee, do we compare it to 1939 and what Hitler did? I mean, you know, some of these things are right out of his playbook. I mean, a number of these things are. Do I try and use something like that language? What I hear from my friends are, oh, both, like you said, Craig, both sides are corrupt. You know, I don't listen to either side. Well, baloney. You know, I mean, there's some hard truths there that we need to pay attention to, that, yeah, this is not right, and this is why it's not right. And by the way, one of the things, speaking of right, I keep hearing left and right, the lefties and the righties. Those two terms have become so derogatory in their use. I really wish we could come up with something else, you know, some other way.
Good and evil?
Well, that might work. That might work. No, but, you know, truly, my buddies, oh, you're just one of those lefties, you know, and I'm not. I mean, I'm kind of middle-of-the-road guy myself, but that's what I get from my compatriots. Yes, please.
I'm just going to say, Bruce and I talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, and my experience as a mediator is don't talk about Trump. Don't talk about Biden. Don't talk about, you know, the problems. Talk about the problems, but not the problems with people or parties.
Yeah, no, I got that.
Talk about what interests, where do you want to go?
Exactly.
And you'll find out how much you have in common.
Right, right. No, I agree. Exactly, Craig. And that's really my dilemma and what I'm working on is how do I address some of these issues in a way that takes the individuals out of it? Because as soon as you say Trump, or Biden, either one, they come right back. You know, oh, well, how about Biden pardoning Bob up? Who cares? You know, I mean, we're talking about this. This is what we're talking about, not what happened before or whatever. And what's important now in this particular instance. And so anyway, I got one more quick thing. I just read recently that that Barron, the Barron Trump, was born in June, and that Melania didn't become a citizen until August. And so he's basically an illegal alien. I love it. You know, I need to point that out to my friends.
Yeah, but he's still white.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. I know.
Yes.
But anyway.
And rich.
And rich, yeah. Yes. Anyway, that's about where I'm at, guys. I just need to figure out how to speak to my compatriots in a way that is impactful, as you say, Kevin.
Yes.
And not live in this world of overwhelm. So mm-hmm. That's where I'm at.
I think the conversation here has been really helpful, I think, to understand all of us and where we're at. I thought there's several things I jotted down, Craig, when you were talking. I think we need to acknowledge we are living in an authoritarian state. Now, whether they are successful or not at achieving that ambition, is it just the opening gambit? But I think we need to be aware that this is a path that we want to try to not go down. But there is, the door is open, maybe is another way to say that. I've mentioned Democracy in Chains on this program more than once over the last 5 years. Dr. Nancy McLean has a webinar entitled What's Next? As a reminder to our listeners, Democracy in Chains is the research that she did on some of the thought that is propelling the Heritage Foundation, which is one of the most conservative movers in the country. And she laid out their plan. And as you now take a look at what's happening, and you can see the elements of that plan are coming together. So I think there is room for concern, significant concern, and for fear associated with that. I also think that a theory of change requires dissatisfaction. Mm. My theory of change. The only way that people will change their behaviors in general is that they have to be dissatisfied. If we're happy, no change required. Mm. So some level of dissatisfaction. So but also, there's three parts to this.
Well, let me just follow up on it. With that dissatisfaction.
Yes.
Maybe the key to this, what I'm talking about, is to say to them, what parts of this don't work for you?
Yes.
You know?
And so then, but coupled with dissatisfaction is ability to see clearly what would be better.
There you go.
Right? Mm-hmm. In other words, dissatisfaction, but I'm stuck in this rut that I can't find a way out, is not going to move anybody out. So what looks different and better? And then some confidence that I can get from here to there, right? It's affordable, achievable. It's going to happen within the next, you know, before the end of my life, whatever, right? Whatever those attributes are. So if we think about trying to move people's actions or behaviors, I think that all three of those elements are important. We need to acknowledge what's going on. We need to recognize that, no, this is not something we should be comfortable with, but we do have a solution. We do have a vision of what would be better, and here's some things we can do between here and there to try to move us in the direction that we'd like. So thank you for inspiring all of those thoughts in my head.
I just kind of wanted two things kind of came together for me, because I think a lot, again, since 2016, the whole, you know, both parties are the same, which is one of the most extreme forms of privilege you can express to say that, right? You either have extreme privilege to be able to say that, or you are so disenfranchised that truly you are beneath the service, right? Of you are experiencing homelessness, you are, you know, you're in a mental health crisis, you are a person for whom our society doesn't work at all, right? And I think that what you said about willingness to change, right, or dissatisfaction, right? When I think of folks who say, well, both parties are the same, what I hear is your life isn't that bad. You may have things in your life that are not working for you. You may have, we all have challenges. We all have kids who get sick and die. We all have, our car breaks down. We all have, you know, how am I going to pay for this new roof, right? We all have these things, but it is, you know, that dissatisfaction. It is an extreme privilege to be able to say, well, I don't vote because both parties are the same. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about what would Washington State look like if we had been under a Republican trifecta for the last 10 years, we you know, we may or who knows, but it would be different, right? We can all agree. We don't know exactly how, but we can all agree it would be different. And then the other thing I kind of want to comment on is, you know, that sky is falling piece. You know, I think a lot about engaging in communities of color. And those are the folks that I look to in these days, in these hardest days, because they are the folks for whom the sky has already fallen. Right. And it who you are, depending on how much the sky has already fallen on you. Right. You have a way of coping and moving through and addressing that in your life. And so, you know, it really is looking to readings, particularly of women of color. Right. Because all they have ever had to do is be resilient. All they have ever had to do is turn on the news to see how they are being disenfranchised. Right. That has been a lifelong experience for them. Right. It's not necessarily who's in the highest office in the land or the lowest office in the land. If you are a woman of color, from the moment you can understand what is on the television, you can understand how the world is, the sky is falling on you, right? And so that I think that is a helpful tool for me, is to look to see, you know, if you live in a body of quote unquote difference, you don't have the privilege of disengaging from that, right? You have to live in that. And so how do they work through that? How do they find grace? How do they find the power to change? How do they find the courage to create change, to engage in community, right? And so really communities of color are so, I don't want to say inspirational, because I think that's not a good term of art for that, but powerful and really help to ground me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is powerful to think in those terms, and particularly to put yourself, you know, walk in somebody else's shoes and get a sense, because we are a privileged island in many ways, although there are people on the island who are not privileged, mm-hmm. and to make those connections as well.
No monolith.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, for me, there's sort of three things going through my head is you know, and Heather Cox Richardson, I love reading her, because it's always that sense of, well, we've been here before, circumstances are different, and this is one of the more extreme examples, but yeah. we've been here.
Well, you know, and at this point, I'm not so darn sure we have been this far.
Well, there are examples.
Okay,
we did have a civil war. Remember?
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
So that's part of it, but also the sense of, you know, first off is we're in a shock and awe campaign. You know, and sort of step back from that for a minute and keep your eye on the ball. You know, what's really going on? What's distracting? You know, you look at the titles of all of these kind of executive orders that are coming out, and they're like out of 1984. Yeah. I mean, they take the language and just sort of turn it around on itself. So again, you know, take that time to step back and look at what's really happening and where the real action is versus where the sort of publicity is. The second thing is, and Amy, you talked about it, and all of us have talked about it, the disinformation. You know, it's sort of like it is just rampant, and social media is a big part of that. And it'll take a while before we get controls over that, but they'll come. But in the meantime, we need to be diligent about what information is what is information, and what we respond to and how we respond to it. And then the third thing for me is there's a fascinating commentary just a couple days ago by Robert Reich. And he was talking about being very optimistic, because in American politics, overreach never works. And what we're seeing is overreach of a tremendous sort of scale that we've rarely seen before. And the sense is, will people buy it? Or will people react? And will 2026 and 2028 be a sweep and clear out the House? Reich thinks so. I'm not quite as optimistic as he is, but at the same time, it's an interesting thing to keep in mind. The American people have never gone along with overreach. Mm-hmm. So we're really nearly at the end here. Truman, what do we have in store next week?
Well, it is a Truman Show next week, again with no guest. And after this conversation today, I'm thinking that we need to pick a few topics that we can actually drill down on and talk about. Okay, here's what's proposed. How are we going to respond to that here? And how is that going to affect us here? and where can we go from there? And I know it's right down Kevin's alley, but I'm really thinking that at this point, that's where we need to go.
So I think you're getting thumbs up from several Brieflies for that.
Yeah, okay, good, good. Thanks.
So for Truman, Amy, Craig, Kevin, I'm Bruce. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again, Nick, next week on the Brown Briefly, and join us for another interesting discussion of current events. Thank you.